Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Medical Monday, June 27th. I'm Ray Graff. Support comes from Saratoga Hospital, providing urgent care for the greater Saratoga region. Available on its Wilton campus in Queensbury at Malta, Med Emergent Care at exit 12, saratogahospital.org. Joining us today is Dr. Giovanni Fadul of Albany Med. Dr. Fadul is a transplant nephrologist who specializes in the medical treatment of kidney transplant patients. He also treats patients with chronic kidney disease, hypertension, and other kidney conditions. Get your calls in early is good advice on a Medical Monday. 800-348-2551 is the number, 800-348-2551, or you can email voxpop at wamc.org. We'll begin after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Our guest on this Medical Monday is Dr. Giovanni Fadul, a transplant nephrologist at Albany Med, who specializes in the medical treatment of kidney transplant patients, including pre-transplant medical evaluations and post-transplant care. He also treats patients with chronic kidney disease, hypertension, other kidney conditions. Dr. Fadul completed fellowship training at Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai, New York City, and did his residency at Staten Island University Hospital. He earned his medical degree from St. Joseph University in Beirut. If you have a question, give us a call now. 800-348-2551 is the number, 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org if you have a question. But the number again, 800-348-2551. Dr. Fadul, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
All right, let's clear up this misconception I had prior to the program. You are a transplant nephrologist at Albany Med, but you don't do transplants. What is it exactly that you do?
Correct. So I'm a transplant nephrologist. I don't do the act of the surgery of transplanting the kidney, but I take care of patients before they get transplanted, evaluating them. And then also we take care of patients who are trying to donate a kidney. Those are the living donors. And I take care of the patients who received a kidney, just received a kidney, and follow them after receiving that kidney a year, 2 years, as much as is needed.
Before we get into the pre-evaluations and the post-evaluations and what you're watching for, how many transplants roughly at Albany Med every year?
So,
kidney transplants.
So as of last year, there was around 70 plus transplants being done. This year, there was probably a little less because of the new regulation of the allocation system.
Can you explain that?
Sure. So usually when a kidney is available for transplantation, it's offered to a hospital that does a kidney transplant. And the radius where it's offered used to be within the local region, then it goes out and out. Now the first time they UNOS tries to allocate this kidney is within around 250 miles. So that includes major cities around us, and that's a lot of centers. So there will be more offers, more kidneys being offered to these centers instead of being offered locally. And that will impact eventually a lot of things, including how many kidneys are available and waiting times. It's not supposed to impact us a lot, but there will be an impact, at least in the first year.
Interesting. Dr. Giovanni Fadul joins us from Albany Med. Dr. Fadul is a transplant nephrologist. Our number here is 800-348-2551. All right, let's talk about the evaluation process and finding, a candidate, someone who is ill who needs a transplant. I understand that perhaps not everyone who needs a transplant can actually have a transplant.
Correct. First of all, we have to identify who needs it. There are a lot of people who eventually end up needing a transplant. Because of the scarcity of kidneys, we have to decide who is the better, recipient of this kidney. Meaning who's going to do well medically receiving a kidney, because receiving a kidney is not only a surgery of putting a kidney in, it's also giving medications to suppress the immunity of this individual. So they're going to have to go through adverse effects of these medications. Whether the adverse effects are little or a lot, they have to know about this and see if they're going to sustain that, first of all. And Of course, like anything in the medical field, if you look, for instance, at dialysis when it started, dialysis wasn't offered to everyone because it was an expensive thing. There wasn't a lot of machines. So the medical boards had to decide who goes on dialysis and who doesn't. Transplant is, in my opinion, in the same situation currently because we don't have enough kidneys and we don't have enough money to get kidneys from all around the world to transplant them, obviously. So we have to decide who are the best fits, who doesn't fit, who's going to benefit, and who will not. And that is not to say that we restricted a lot in the United States. There are a lot of people waiting for a kidney transplant. There are probably five times more patients waiting on a kidney transplant than there are transplants being done every year. Mm. So we do have a big backlog there.
And what makes someone, let's see, how do I describe my question properly to a doctor? What makes a patient able to take a kidney from donor A but not donor B?
So to kind of reverse it, make it easier to understand, all patients can basically take a kidney from anyone. There are situations where you cannot, and these situations are mainly, in the United States, restricted to not being of the same blood group. Although a few places do different blood groups, they have to prepare these patients in a certain way. The general idea, you cannot cross blood groups. And the second thing, there is what we call a donor-specific antibody. So if the patient who is receiving the kidney has a lot of these and we cannot get rid of them, usually we try to avoid putting that kidney in the recipient because it will most probably reject.
Is a family member usually your first option for getting a donor?
So family members obviously are encouraged because there are higher chances of finding a match, and by the match is not a very simple thing, but there's a better chance of finding somebody who matches closer with the recipient than going somewhere else. However, you can still find a donor who is not related to the recipient who matches perfectly and much better than a family member.
Dr. Giovanni Fadul joins us today. He is a transplant nephrologist at Albany Med. The number to call is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, and we'll get to the phones and the email bag right after our first break. Okay, the transplant has been done. Dr. Fadul sets in and starts working. What are you looking for? Rejection is one possibility, yes?
Right. So in the first period after transplantation, the first, I would say, 3 months are the most critical. The first week, the patient is in the hospital. They're going to be there probably for 4 to 10 days, depending on how the surgery goes. Of course, if there are no complications, we are looking at the surgery being a success, all the connections being done correctly, the creatinine, which is the number we follow to see how the kidney is performing, going down, urine flowing well. So everything going in order without any complications. We are looking, make sure there is no acute rejection happening.
Which means?
So acute rejection means a rejection that's happening rapidly. Okay, we're not talking, there's something called hyperacute rejection, which happens usually once you put the kidney in, and those are practically gone because of the process of vetting the recipient, the donor, and seeing the matches. Now, after acute rejections are eliminated, we're making sure there are also no complications of infections happening. And those can go on for years. But the critical period, I would say, are the first few months. After the first 6 months, these things calm down. The main rejections, what we call cellular rejections, calm down. Infections start going down. And then they can still occur, but at a lower rate.
Mm. And medications have to be part of your post-game analysis and the way you treat your patients. You're watching medications closely, yes?
Correct. So put it simply, these patients who are receiving a kidney transplant were already a kidney patient. So they already are on a lot of medications that are related to kidney failure. Now that they received that kidney, their native kidneys are still there, but they're not functioning. So now we're going to remove these medications they used to depend on. But also now they depend on medications to suppress their immunity. Not everyone is going to be on the same medications. We pick and choose depending on the risk of rejection. But obviously, we're going to have to manipulate these medications. In the first year, there are a lot of medications being given. But then we start removing them slowly, slowly. And by the end of first year, the patient is expected to take a lot less medication than they had in the beginning. So there's a lot of close follow-up, I would say, in the first year.
How long, on average, will a kidney transplant recipient live?
So life-wise is different than the graft itself living. So if we're talking about the kidney transplant itself, on average, a deceased donor would live, the kidney would live around 12 years. Mm. A living donor, on average, would live around 17 years. Now, we have patients who are transplanted who have it now for 25 years, and they are alive. Mm. The life expectancy of the patient themselves is not very dependent in this case, meaning if a patient is transplanted and for any reason they would have died in 10 years, they're going to die in 10 years. The kidney is just extending their life. Mm. So, and this is something that usually patients ask me and they have it confused. When somebody has a kidney failure, it's a vital organ. So when the kidneys are not functioning, it's a matter of hours, days, or weeks before a patient dies.
Right.
So when dialysis comes in, dialysis is extending their life. Obviously, it's not extending their life like somebody with a normal kidney would have, because a normal kidney functioning has other things that dialysis cannot provide. Now, once we put a kidney transplant in, their life expectancy is longer than if they had only done dialysis. And that is based on studies that showed that people who have a kidney transplant live longer. There is the obvious, well, I have a complication, I have an infection, and the patient end up dying. Yes, that also happens with dialysis. So head-to-head compared, a kidney transplant is always better longevity-wise for the patient's life.
Let's take a quick break. We're joined today by Dr. Giovanni Fadul of Albany Med, Transplant Nephrology Today and General Nephrology. If you have a question, our number is 800-348-2551, and we'll be right back. It's a Medical Monday. Ray Graff with you. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. We're joined today by Dr. Giovanni Fadul, transplant nephrologist at Albany Med. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. Let's take care of a couple of emails here before we get rolling. This email came in quite a bit earlier today from Hillary. Subject, possible questions for Dr. Fadul. Immediately post-transplant, any health issues causing fever or elevated blood counts, we were told to report to Albany Med for admission to transplant unit. Now 7 years post-op, but followed yearly by transplant, do you recommend still going to Albany Med if a hospital admission is needed, or is a local hospital fine? Well, you're an employee of Albany Med, so careful how you answer this one.
So, in general, when a patient is released from the transplant center, that means they don't need a close follow-up. Oh. If they have an issue and they go to a local hospital, let's say to the ER, and whatever the issue is, sometimes the doctors in the ER or on admission determine that this case is easy to handle. We don't really need to transfer the patient. They will handle it. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they will give us a call, run the case with us, and say, would you like the patient to come to you, or can we keep them? And we let them know what we want to do. Sometimes they determine the case is too complicated. There's a lot of need of changing medication. Mostly when a patient is in the ICU, they prefer they transfer them to us. Mm. But that is not a straightforward thing. So obviously it's based on evaluation by the physician at the other hospital.
Part two of Hillary's question, travel. We were told no travel outside of the USA after transplant. Is there a time after transplant, and if COVID were less of a concern, where travel to Europe is safe?
So, as I said earlier, in the first year, there are a lot of things going on. So in the first year, probably the transplant center would say, no, don't leave. However, at some points, the transplant center is seeing the patient every 2 weeks or every 4 weeks. So if somebody wants to go for a vacation for a week or two, I don't see why this would be a no. However, it's always good to plan with the nephrologist or the transplant center and say, okay, I'm going to this area. What do you think? Of course, if they're going backpacking for 2 weeks in the middle of nowhere, we would say no, because if something happens, they're going to need the hospital that can take care of them as a transplant recipient.
Yeah.
If they're going to go to Rome and spend 2 weeks, well, Rome is a major center for transplants, I'm going to say that's fine.
Okay, so there really, it's a proximity to your doctor issue and not one of possible health concerns just leaving the country. It's as long as there is a doctor nearby, it's all right.
There is that. There is also the fact that there are countries where they have a higher rate of infections of different things.
Ah.
In these countries, they're going to need vaccines. Now, some vaccines are not allowed in kidney transplant recipients, like live vaccines. Mm. So this puts a higher risk on these patients. That's why they will always have to go back to the transplant center and say, is this country okay? Is this place okay?
Interesting.
So they can discuss with them and see if it's okay or not.
We're joined today by Dr. Giovanni Fadul of Albany Med. Final question from Hillary, and then we'll move on. That's three questions. Usually you get one, but Hillary gave us three. Besides taking anti-rejection meds and going to routine doctor visits, have you found any specific key to the long-term success of a grafted kidney?
All right, so up until I want to say a couple of years ago, in general, the long-term success of a kidney transplant was limited. As I said, the average was 12 to 17 years, depending if it's a deceased donor or a living donor. Now, there's a medication called Prograf, and the less you use of it, the longer this kidney is going to last, usually. There are a couple of medications that are under investigation currently that are being used to see if their use on the long run is going to extend the life of these kidneys. There's something called chronic antibody-mediated rejection, and that's the Achilles tendon of the kidney transplant currently. And that's what they're working on. They're working on inhibiting this rejection on the long run. So if we have a breakthrough with these medications, I would say this is going to prolong the life of these kidneys.
All right, one more email, and then we'll hit the phones. The number here is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Mark writes, can you please explain what causes chronic kidney disease? Why is it called chronic? What exactly is happening in the body that makes it a chronic problem? And what does this mean for kidney patients in terms of self-care after diagnosis?
So obviously chronic assumes there is something acute. An acute kidney disease, we assume reversibility usually. However, when a disease is not reversible, it causes scar tissue in the kidney, like in any other organ, like in our skin, in our heart, in our liver. So whenever there is scar tissue in a kidney and it cannot be repaired by the body itself, or we cannot intervene to reverse it, then the loss of the kidney function becomes permanent. We define chronic kidney disease as a drop in the kidney function that is lasting more than 3 months and that is not reversible. So that's how we define it, basically.
Let's hit our phone lines now, and we're joined once again by Dr. Giovanni Fadul, transplant nephrologist at Albany Med. The number is 800-348-2551, and let's start in Brattleboro, Vermont. Susie, you're on.
Hi. First of all, Ray, I really, really appreciate what you do.
Oh, thank you.
And your first questions are always great, and Dr. Fadul, your answers are so clear that anyone can understand them. So thank you for that.
Thank you. Thank you.
My question is, there's an older married couple, 80 years old, and they're both healthy. They walk, et cetera, et cetera. And the husband would like to give the wife one of his kidneys. What do you think of that? And is there a place that specializes in older people transplants?
All right. So, very good question. So, I do not frankly know of any place that specializes in older people transplant. Any transplant center is supposed to not limit things by age. Age is not usually a limit. It's the functional status of the patient. Now, if somebody wants to donate...
It's the function of what?
It's the functional status of a patient, meaning if a patient is very healthy, otherwise, there is no reason why we should limit anything related to transplantation. Now, when donation comes in the issue, we have to usually evaluate the donor, and we have to make sure then that when the donation happens, whatever happens later, it doesn't affect the life of the donor. That's the most basic thing in our evaluation. So we vet the donor to make sure there will be no issues. Now, if the patient is an 80-year-old, they're probably more frail, let's say, than a 60-year-old to go through surgery. So again, donation itself is a surgery. So they have to be able to go through the surgery. They have to be able to survive the complications. And the remaining kidney in them, we should evaluate it and say, well, if you remain with one kidney, you're not going to die of kidney failure. If anything, the patient is going to die of natural causes or other things. As long as these things fit, there is no reason to say no. But I would say I've never seen somebody probably more than 70 years of age donate so far, but probably it happened before, and I don't see why not.
Susie.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. Dr. Fadul, you also care for those who donate the kidneys post-op?
Correct. So when a kidney, when a patient wants to donate a kidney, or let's say a donor, because they're not really sick, we have to evaluate them first. Once we evaluate them, we make sure that they're healthy or healthy enough to donate and survive with that kidney. We then have to follow them usually for 3 years. Some places they do longer to make sure that not having any complications, any issues from donating the kidney. Donation of a kidney can have some issues later.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. We go to Port Jervis. Haley, you're on.
Hi. There are a couple of pieces of information I probably need to provide in order to ask my question.
Okay.
The first is that I'm going to be both a cardiac and renal transplant candidate. I have polycystic kidney disease. And especially one of my kidneys is particularly large. I believe that removing native kidneys sometimes happens with PKD patients. And I was curious if you could tell me what criteria would make that doable.
Okay. So, yes, you are correct. Removing the native kidneys in polycystic kidney disease is sometimes necessary. However, this necessity is based on your symptoms and signs and surgical feasibility, meaning if it's something that's bothering you all the time, you're having pain from it, you're having lots of bleeding, probably it's a good idea to remove the kidney, even if you're not donating. Now, if the kidneys are bulging on other organs, if the kidneys are going to be a problem for the surgeon to insert the kidney, the transplanted kidney, most probably the surgeon is going to opt to reduce the size or remove the whole kidney at this point. Does this answer your question?
Haley? Yes, thank you. I appreciate it very much.
Sure.
Thank you.
Good luck, Haley. Thanks for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. We're joined by Dr. Giovanni Fadul, transplant nephrologist at Albany Med. And let's see here. Let's go to Matamoros. Jim, you're on.
What type of sutures are used on the small vessels on the kidney transplant?
So Jim, as we clarified earlier, I'm not a surgeon, so I would not be able to answer this question for you. I'm sorry.
Jim, I got to know, why do you want to know that?
Well, I was just wondering, my father actually died of kidney disease about 34 years ago now.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it. The number here is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. It's a Medical Monday, and let's go to Pittsfield. Mark, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. So I've had chronic kidney disease.
Hey, Mark, hang in there, buddy. Mark, the wind noise is making your call almost impossible to hear. Is there any way you can just pull over and take it off speakerphone for a minute? Are you still there?
Yes, I can do that.
Okay, that would be great.
Okay. 1 second.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, there we are. Yes, go ahead.
So I'm in stage 4 chronic kidney disease and feeling fine, but my GFR and creatinine are slowly getting worse. And my last visit with my nephrologist, he said, well, it's time to start thinking about transplant or dialysis. So I have been thinking about those and wondering when is it appropriate to submit one's name for a possible transplant?
Great question.
All right. So in general, we encourage people who have a GFR less than 30. A GFR, just for people listening, is a measurement of how much the kidney is filtrating. Usually it should be anywhere between 90 and 120. So once the GFR...
Okay, mine is 24.
Right. So once the GFR drops below 30, we encourage people to start seeking advice from transplant center, preparing them for a possible transplant. And that depends also on how quick patients are worsening. Sometimes they're worsening super slow. We wait till they are at GFR of 22, for instance. And we do that because... Right. And we do that because once a patient reaches a GFR of 20, we are able to put them on the list for a waiting time, to accumulate waiting time on the transplant list. So patients don't need to go all the way to dialysis to start accumulating time. They can start accumulating time early on. And that also benefits them because sometimes some patients need more time than others to prepare for a transplant, do their test. So that gives them plenty of time to get ready for a transplant.
Mark.
Thank you very much for that information. So, yeah, it's moving slowly, so I guess I will wait. I'm 77 years old. You said there's no age limit on it, but when does it become sort of less practical to do a transplant?
So, again, age is not supposed to be a limit.
But is it?
No, I mean, not really. We have patients who are 90-year-old who are fully functional, and
yeah.
We have patients who are 60-year-olds who can't function. So I would say it's all based on your evaluation. You just have to understand that the older a patient gets, the more vetting there will be, the more CAT scans, the more heart cardiac evaluation with your cardiologist there will
yes.
be. So that's all how it's going to be. And obviously, the risk for surgery starts increasing with age. So that's always to be kept in mind.
Mark, thank you very much for the call. This GFR of which you speak, at what number GFR do you have to go on dialysis?
So there is no exact number where a patient has to go on dialysis. Actually, the blood work can look very scary, and the patient doesn't need to go on dialysis. And that's because numbers just suggest to us where the patient is. Some patients, usually they say GFR of 15 and less, which is stage 5. But a GFR can be 5, and the patient doesn't need dialysis, and we wait. I had patients who had a GFR of 6, wait 2 years before they got on dialysis, and they were feeling perfectly fine.
Interesting. Now, you do not have to be on dialysis to be on a waiting list?
No. You can be listed before you get on dialysis. However, once you get on dialysis, the clock starts registering and you're accumulating time regardless. So if a patient, let's say, starts dialysis and they don't want to be on a kidney transplant, and then after 2 years they say, you know what, I want to be on a kidney transplant list. Those 2 years they were on dialysis, they already accumulated towards their waiting time.
All right, now, this waiting time, and I know we have to take a break and we have to get back to the phones, 800-348-2551. This waiting list,
yeah.
I find interesting. Who is the keeper of the list? And if our last caller is 75 and
yeah.
his GFR is 24 or whatever, and he's doing okay, progressing slowly downward,
right.
Does he get lower on that priority list than someone who is really in need right up front?
So that is an excellent question. And so there's an organism called UNOS, and they have pretty much everyone is registered there. And they allocate, they help allocating kidneys. And they allocate kidneys based also on age. So let's say there is a score for a kidney to see how good it is. It's called KDPI. So the better the score, the more you're going to allocate this kidney, for instance, to a pediatric patient or to a younger patient who has no issues. The higher the score means that kidney probably won't serve the patient too long. Probably you would allocate it to a much older patient who's sicker. Now, we did say that there is no age for transplantation. However, we also have to be logical in things because this is life we're talking about. It's not only math. So a patient who's 80 years old, let's say, and the life expectancy in a certain country is 85. Are they going to go through a surgery, all these immunosuppressive medications, to gain, let's say, 5 more years with a kidney transplant, whereas they can be on dialysis for 5 more years?
Mm.
So it's also more of a
So there's question. A practical side, and there is also
right.
an
there
ethical
There is a practical
side.
Side, exactly. And that's also for the patient to decide. That's not all for us to decide. The patient has a big say in it. They might say, you know what, you're giving me this information, I calculate it, and I don't want to be on a list.
Yeah.
And leave me alone. So,
Dr. Giovanni Fadul is teaching us quite a lot today. Let's take a break. It is Vox Pop. It is Medical Monday. And we'll be back with more of your calls and your emails coming up. John Schofield with McCoy Tyner here on Vox Pop. The number to call is 800-348-2551, and we're joined today by transplant nephrologist Giovanni Fadul of Albany Med. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. We'll get back to that in a moment. I have a question, probably not a bright question, and then we'll ask an email question that will certainly be brighter. You can get a transplant from a dead person or a live person. Is there any difference ultimately to the patient?
Right. So as we spoke earlier, a deceased donor kidney usually lasts 12 years.
Why is it? So why?
So in general, it could be related to factors that are happening when the transplant is being taken from the donor, meaning when a patient dies and we're harvesting the kidney, there's a higher risk of it having sustained damage from drop in blood pressure, for instance. That kidney is also waiting to be transplanted. So the longer you wait to transplant the kidney, the more it's going to suffer because there is a wait time to transport to get it to the place where it's going. So there is more damage happening to the kidney itself. That's one. Two, there's theorized that this damage can expose factors or what we call antigens, molecules in the kidney, that can later be recognized by the recipient and mount an immune reaction on the long run. And also, when you're receiving a kidney from a dead donor, deceased donor, you're not choosing how well this kidney is matched all the time. So there would be a bias, I would say, because if you're using your living donors and they're much better matched than your deceased donors, obviously you're going to favor the longevity of this kidney.
That makes sense. This email from, it looks like, Kevin in Greenfield. Why would I be turned down as a donor because I take blood pressure medicine?
So blood pressure medication, hypertension itself, high blood pressure, and taking a medication for this is not a strict no for donors. However, it has to be very well controlled and usually on one medication without any issues. So probably in this situation, that person had more than a medication or they were not perfectly controlled or had other factors that the evaluator thought that there might be damage on the long run for the donor.
Let's go back to our phones now. The number is 800-348-2551. We're joined by Dr. Giovanni Fadul of Albany Med. Bill is in Chatham. Bill, you're on.
Hi there. My son had kidney failure when he was 7 years old. He was on dialysis for a year and then got a transplant from a deceased donor a year later, so when he was 8. And he's now 15. And everything seems to be going well. We do six-month checkups with his nephrologist. But I'm just curious, as the kidney starts to age and he starts to age more, what signs we could be looking for physically in him to know if we may be approaching something damaging happening to his kidney.
All right. So as you said, and that's a very good noticing, that kidney is as old as the donor was when the kidney was taken. As we age, we lose some kidney function. So obviously, it's going to age with your son. Now, the signs that you would look for probably are the same signs that he had when he had kidney failure. This said, kidneys are silent in that manner. So a lot of patients come to us and tell us, well, I feel fine. Why are you saying that my kidneys are not doing well? Somebody would have pretty much 20% of their kidney left, and they would feel fine. They would have 50 and they would feel fine. They would have 10% sometimes and they would feel fine. So the level at which a patient starts not feeling well varies between a person and another. The way we know how much the kidney is functioning is through the blood work that we do. So that tells us exactly how well the kidney is doing, how it's evolving. And again, we follow creatinine, we follow other things like cystatin C. There are markers that we do for kidney transplants that are not just related to function, that are related to rejection that we can look at. So really, this will tell you, even before there are any symptoms or signs, how well the kidney is doing. Now, once you have symptoms and signs that are related to kidney failure, that means the damage has already been so extensive that there isn't much kidney left. And that's where you really have to do something. You have to start preparing again for dialysis or start preparing for another transplant.
Bill.
Okay, that all makes sense. And at this stage in the process, would you think that six-month blood work and like urine work is an appropriate cadence to be at with him?
So it depends on each center, their philosophy. The usual one in the United States is that after the first year or third year, depending on the center, you have to follow every 3 months on the dot. There are places that do more. There are places that do less. But usually 3 months is an average. Also, depending on the patient, some patients are higher risk or some patients had already let's say a sort of infection or a rejection. These patients need more blood work than every 3 months, for instance. Some patients I see have had a kidney for 20 years. They're on one medication and they've been perfectly fine. So we extend it to every 6 months. We sometimes still do blood work every 3 months, but we don't see them until 6 months. And that's because of the nature of rejection. It's so unpredictable that you always have to keep monitoring.
Bill.
Okay, that's great. Thank you so much.
Sure.
Thanks for the call. This business of transplanting kidneys into very young people, I find fascinating because they're still growing. Is the post-op monitoring that you do and the watching and the medications and everything markedly different because somebody is still growing and they're really young? I mean, that kid had a transplant at age 7.
So I'm not a pediatric nephrologist. We have pediatric nephrologists who take care of children who receive that transplant. But in general, the kidney, if it's a small kidney, actually it can still grow. And their care is a bit different because they are growing. So sometimes dosing medications can vary. And that reflects usually in the blood work that is done. So let's say they need more of this medication, that increase it based on the blood work. So yes, there are variations that are specific to pediatric population, definitely.
We're joined by Dr. Giovanni Fadul today, transplant nephrologist from Albany Med. And let's ask a holistic question here. Maybe this is a dumb question, but your kidneys fail. or you are failing, presumably there is something in your body or in your lifestyle that has led to that. If you get a transplant, won't all that just happen again?
Excellent question. So kidney failure can be due to a lot of reasons. We're talking hundreds of reasons, if not more. The main reasons in the world and the United States are high blood pressure and diabetes. In the United States, it's diabetes worse than high blood pressure. Then there is a myriad of things. Then there are things called glomerulonephritis. Then there are things called cystic diseases. The main thing, like diabetes and high blood pressure, if they remain uncontrolled after a kidney is transplanted, there is an obvious damage that's going to happen from diabetes and high blood pressure, and the patient can lose their kidney from high blood pressure and diabetes. So control of diabetes and high blood pressure are necessary when we're working somebody up for a kidney transplant. So you are correct. You have to control these conditions before you transplant.
This email came in from John in Hamden, Mass. And by the way, the number is 800-348-2551 if you would like to jump in here in the waning moments with Dr. Giovanni Fadul. John in Hamden writes, I'm 84 years old. I have stage 1 kidney disease for which I am taking medication prescribed by my kidney specialist. What is stage 1 and what are the stages of kidney disease?
So stages of kidney disease, I would say, were created to make research easier, communication of levels easier, and also to communicate it to patients in an easier way. A stage 1 kidney disease is defined usually by pretty much a normal filtration of the kidney. However, there would be something else happening, like having protein in the urine or having damage to the kidney from a structural issue, for instance. So that's what a stage 1 kidney disease is. To have our listeners understand it a little bit more, a kidney doesn't only filtrate. A kidney does a lot of other things. Filtration is one of them. Keeping protein inside our body and not losing it in the urine is another thing. And that's a property of how the kidney is made. So even though the filtration can be normal within normal level, that doesn't mean that the kidney is always performing great. So that's what a CKD, stage kidney one, means. Stage 1 kidney means.
Sorry. Gotcha.
Yep.
All right. Let's go back to our phone lines here, and we will go to Schenectady. Tracy, you're on.
Good afternoon. I want to find out about the donor. Is there any health issues that will happen to the donor in the future? And does it decrease their life expectancy?
All right. So a kidney donor, usually when we evaluate them, we take them as perfectly healthy people. So eventually they're going to live their life without having any issues from the kidneys. However, there is sometimes an increased risk of having high blood pressure. There is, for women who didn't conceive yet, for instance, they can have a little bit of higher issues in pregnancies. So usually we encourage donors after pregnancies. The main issue is kidney failure. Now, donors have a higher risk than non-donors to end up on dialysis, up to 8 times even. And that's scary, usually, if you take the data as it is, as raw data. And that's based on a study that was done before, years ago. And if I say something like this to a donor, the donor will say, why would I even donate? I'm going to lose my kidneys 8 times more. Well, the risk to the general population compared to the general population is still 3 times less. And that is because, a priori, a donor is usually healthy. So a healthy person already has probably 30 times less risk of ending up on dialysis than the general population. Now that the donor gave a kidney, their risk has increased, but still they are lower than the general population.
Mm.
And also, this is if we're looking probably at somebody who's in their 30s. If we're looking at somebody who's in their 60s, their risk decreases because, as we said, life expectancy comes into this equation. So donating at 60, having high blood pressure, sometimes is allowed compared to somebody who's 30 years old with high blood pressure.
Ah.
There are equations that we can use that can predict the risk, not super accurately, but can give an idea to the donor where they would be. And usually the donor can make a decision also based on that. our job as nephrologists, as transplant nephrologists, is to make sure we don't let them do something overzealous, like something that will hurt them. But then if there is a small risk, we can discuss with them, and then they will decide if they want to donate or not.
Now, you mentioned equations. Tracy, I'll let you jump back in for a follow-up in a minute. You mentioned equations, but this is based on your knowledge and experience, and every patient is different, right? There's not a book that says, okay, you meet such and such a standard, you're okay.
Correct. So these equations are based on studies that followed patients over a duration of time and saw that this patient with this age after this time ended up on DIAZ or did not end up on DIAZ. So after they take all these variables, they plug in all the variables, they generate an equation with multiple variables, we can plug it in and give our patient an idea of where they would be. And this is available online, basically. They can go in and look at it.
Tracy, do you want to follow up?
Yes, the recipient has had their kidney for however many years it lasted, and then it starts wearing out. Can they get another one? Do they start again on the waiting list?
I want to say I've seen somebody who received their sixth kidney one time. So, yes, definitely.
Okay.
For sure.
Tracy, thanks a lot. We only have about 90 seconds left, but let's go to Amadou in Albany. You're on.
Yes. Hi, good afternoon.
Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, my name is Amadou. I'm a 56-year-old. I recently started having issues with my kidneys. This is back in September of 2021.
Okay. Are you on speakerphone, Amadou?
No, I'm not.
Okay, we're having a tough time. You might be in a bad cell spot. Give it one more try really quick. We're almost done.
Yes, what I say is I have been issues with my kidneys recently, starting in September of 2021.
Yeah, we're not, unfortunately, the connection is just terrible here. I apologize. Let's go to Peter in Great Barrington. Peter, you have about 30 seconds, sir.
All right, I'll make it quick. Yes, I participated in an altruistic kidney donation back in 2012. Down at Columbia Presbyterian, our surgeon was Dr. Lloyd Ratner. The surgery was successful. Henry and I are going to celebrate our 10th anniversary. And I just want to urge people to consider donating. Having one kidney is no different than having two. You can function just fine with one kidney.
All right. Well, Peter, thank you. What do you say to that, doctor?
Well, I want to thank him for calling in because this is great to hear from a donor and their good experience. The majority, if not the immense majority of donors, have no issues. They live fine. And it's a great thing what they do. It's literally giving life to another person. Nobody can top that. There is no monetary value for this. We encourage people to be evaluated if they can for kidney donation. So this is great of him, and good luck for him.
You didn't pay him, did you? That's a great way to wrap
no,
the show.
Not at all. And I wanna say one more thing about donors. I did say that the numbers, they have a little bit of more risk, but they are rewarded in a sense in the end, in case they end up needing a dialysis and needing a transplant. They are put at the top of the list. So they're going to get the next kidney.
All right. Well, Dr. Giovanni Fadul, thank you for being here today.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Support comes from Albany Cardiothoracic Surgeons, patient-centered heart surgery for over 50 years, welcoming Dr. Soon Park and Dr. Stephanie Helmer to their St. Peter's Hospital practice, ACTSURG.com. Once again, thanks to Dr. Giovanni Fadul for being here today. Thank you for listening. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Phone screened by Joe Makowitz. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on the show, now there may or may not be a hearing on Capitol Hill. I am not sure. But if there isn't one, Astronomy with Bob Berman and Valerie Rapson tomorrow at 2. We'll see you for that.